Rodney and Lou, whenever you're ready.
We're ready. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This morning, the VMS Enforcement Committee held a meeting here prior to this meeting, and we went over a couple of issues. The first one was the enforcement. The VMS committee will produce a laminated sheet of prioritized points of contact. The U.S. Coast Guard, OLE hotline, and the five state representatives. If this is for that safe harbor provision, the vessels, if they're coming into safe harbor, we'll encourage them. We'll give them a format to follow to contact the right person or people so they can come into a harbor. That was the first thing we decided to do. And then from that, NOAA Fisheries in Gloucester is developing and the time is uncertain on that, a web page that will provide feedback to fishermen about their trips, their information such as days at sea. And the website is dependent on Days at Sea database being debugged. The committee recommends that the council send a letter to the National Marine Fisheries Service encouraging the completion of this Days at Sea website as soon as possible. Okay, next I got that one. The absence of a VMS polling data does not indicate the reason. Calls to vessels that may incur and determine a further reason. But this is dependent on time and a vendor. Nevertheless, all vendors have features that provide for safety and emergency notifications. Some are extra costs, and some must be set up by the owner. Some are not implemented yet, but the committee will recommend that the council send a letter to all VMS vendors indicating potential vendors, asking them to contact their clients and explain the details of how these safety features work, and encourage the fishermen to implement any needed procedure that this may be done at the next billing cycle. We indicated that the vendors could send a letter at the next billing cycle indicating that this could be done. It must be noted that the EPIRB device may be turned on and off and send a signal as an emergency signal. The Coast Guard made us aware of it, that rather than have two different systems, that the EPIRB was to be the main system. And this could be just a backup system. Okay. Jackie O'Dell delivered a letter of concern on penalty schedules for mesh size and possession limit violations. And she attached the letter. And what the letter really says is the committee should request from NOAA any information that may have a related graduated penalty fees or schedules for use in guidance for enforcement and legal counsel. The industry would like the committee to develop an incremental graduated fee schedule for normal violations and minimum mesh size fish violations, possession limits with specific purpose for assisting enforcement to better focus on schedule that will consist with biological and behavioral benefits intended by these measures. And she just goes on to expand on this. Okay, we have a couple of motions that the committee made. Okay, the committee recommends that the council send a letter to National Marine Fisheries requesting that they investigate the change of VMS polling to the baseline and declaration of the fishery. The motion passed 4-0 and one abstention. 4 in favor, 0 opposed, and 1 abstention.
Ronnie, can you help out with the motion on the, so we can get it on the board?
Okay. Do you want me to pass it to Karen or just go over again? Okay. The committee recommends that the council send a letter to the National Marine Fisheries Service requesting that they investigate the change to VMS polling based on the declaration of the fishery. Basically, this came about if a person holds two multi-permits, like a multi-species, which polls every hour, and a general category scallop permit, which polls every half hour, and a couple of fishermen indicated that they're not in the general category scallop fishery, but they own that permit, and due to that, their polling bills have gone doubled, and that's what this was about.
Okay, that was a committee motion. Doesn't require a second discussion on the motion. John Nelson, then Phil.
Mr. Chairman, it's asking them to investigate the change.
Right.
I guess I might not be clear on it. I know Rodney said that if you had one permit, type of permit, scallops, you get pulled every half hour. If you get others, you get pulled on the hour. So are they asking really that they investigate whether or not various permit holders should be pulled on the half hour versus the hour, or what exactly are we looking at here?
Rodney?
Yep. That was basically it, to see if somebody was not using that permit, that he should be polled on the hour rather than the half hour. That's basically, if that could be done, that's what this was.
I think that we ought to just clarify that motion just a little bit more, and I'm not sure that I have the language that would be appropriate for it, but obviously the intent is that if somebody has identified to the service that they're not on a scallop trip, and I use that as an example. I don't know if there's any others that are on a half hour. But if they're not on a scholar trip, they've notified the service in advance, and would the service be able to adjust the polling to an hour basis or whatever is appropriate? I think that seems to be what I'm hearing as the request.
Okay. Phil?
Maybe I can help a little. John's right in a sense, but the reason for investigate is the service wasn't sure. They have never looked into changing the VMS by declaring it by polling. It's never been even thought of, so they have to go in and see whether it's possible to do that. The whole issue actually, to me, becomes an equity issue in the regulations as they were written. General category ended up with a half an hour polling rate. Multi-species has an hour pollen rate. I don't know what the heron fleet is, but we have different pollen rates and different ones. Depending on what permits you have is what the rate at which you're polled. So like last year, before I had a VMS general category permit, I was polled once an hour on my multi-species. No matter whether I'm fishing that or not, I'm still polled. But because I added VMS, now I get polled every half an hour, and it costs me twice as much. And that's the same. That's the concern with most of the people in the industry, is just because they added this general category scholar permit, their polling rate actually doubled, and their bills actually doubled. So it's just a matter of whether, if you're not in the general category scholar fishery and you declare out of it, can you go back to your regular multi-species or any combination of the above, can you declare in and out so that you're not double polled when you don't really need to be? Because that's any clearer, I hope.
I think what the question is, first of all, is did the committee discuss whether or not this is specific to holding the general category permit, or are there other instances where people can hold multiple permits and experience the situation? And I guess the second question is, is it a function of holding the permit that sets the standard for polling, or is it, and if so, an opportunity to, in a sense, declare that you're not going to be using that permit for a period of time, I think, is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I had Mike and then Dave.
Thank you, John. I thought the investigation was in the discussion this morning, whether or not it was the council's intent to get pulled every half hour if you had a scallop permit. I mean, if you have a 1B scallop permit and you DOF, you're still getting pulled twice an hour. And I think the discussion was with Gene was whether or not it was at the council's intent or not. That's what the investigation was. Thanks.
Hey, Dave Gaethel and then Pat Kirkle.
I was going to answer the question about the scallop permit. The only way, you know, I have a 1A scallop permit now. I gave up my 1B, and I can only re-enter the fishery when I renew my permit. So you can't get in and out. You have to give it up for a year, basically, unless you want to have the double polling. Even though I did not go scalloping at all last year, so I had a choice. It'd be either be a 40-pound and under scallop person for a year, or be double polled for a year, even though I may never go scallop fishing. And that's the crux of the issue.
Pat.
The general category scallopers are polled every half hour in the same way that the limited access scallopers are. And so it seems to have become an issue when VMS was added to the general category scallop permit requirement. And it is a permit requirement. If you hold the permit, you're polled twice an hour. But our understanding of the request is to look at two things. Number one, what are the regulatory requirements and what are the constraints of those regulatory requirements? And number two, what are the technical restrictions? Can it even be done on a trip-by-trip basis? And to explore those and report back to the council. So if it's, you know, I mean, I think as long as that's consistent with what the committee was looking for, then that's how we would respond.
Committee members, is that Ronnie?
Basically, I think that's it. It's to see if it could be done, because right now they're getting pulled by the permit they hold, not by the fishery they're in, and if it could be changed. And I think Pat summarized it just about right.
Okay. If there's not any further questions, Pat's given us her understanding of the motion. I'll call the question. All those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed. Okay, motion passes. One abstention. Rodney, anything else?
Yeah, we have a couple more motions here. The committee recommends that the council send a letter to National Marine Fisheries asking that the turtle chain rule be reevaluated and to allow a description of the chain configuration to allow for safety reasons. We have the regular motion on the back, but that's it. And that was voted. That was 2 approved, 0, 2 nays, and 3 abstentions on that motion.
What was the count on the vote, Rodney?
2-0 and 3. 2 approved the motion. 0 was against it, and there was 3 abstentions.
Okay.
So it was 2.
Okay, discussion on the motion. Sally.
Maybe if we had a little more discussion or explanation of the debate at the committee that would result in more people abstaining than voting in favor, that would be helpful, because that's kind of unusual.
Well, I think NIMS weighed in that the people that were enforcing it didn't weigh in on this, and that's why some of the abstentions were, but And then it was brought up that this was an enforcement, and it was an enforcement committee, but this is an enforcement and safety recommendations. And this was brought up because if you have to measure this while the scallop dredge is up in the air, 5 to 6 ton, it would be very difficult for a Coast Guard officer to be under that dredge while it was swinging in the air. That's why this was brought up. And it was rather than having right now I believe it's 14-inch squares, rather than have a determined amount of up and downs and a determined amount of tickler change in there. That's why it was.
Mike Leary.
Does anyone else want to weigh in and give some more rationale on this motion or discussion? Phil and then David.
I'll try, Mr. Chair. One of the problems is the description that's now in place, that NMFS has put in place, requires the squares on the turtle chains to be no less than 14 inches, I think is how it reads. One of the big problems with that is these are chain configurations. As you said, as the chain is moving, it changes constantly. There's the effectiveness that the industry came up with for the turtle excluder is not 14-inch squares. It's X amount of rows of chain this way and X amount of rows of chain this way, so that 14 is very problematic in the enforcement. It's very problematic in the industry of trying to hold the 14-inch square when the chains are changing all the time. I mean, if chains become a little wear here, a little wear here, it becomes a half an inch, a quarter of an inch, something like that. It's not to the point of where it's going to be detrimental to the turtles. It's a matter of this configuration. It'd be great if we had the thing on the board and you could see the picture, and you could see what you're looking at. It just makes common sense that it should be, you need X amount of up and down chains, you need X amount of cross chains, whether it's 12 inches here and 14 inches here and 12 here or whatever, it wouldn't matter. So that's the gist of it. But having the thing swinging over your head while a guy standing out there with a tape measure trying to run it, just practically impossible.
I'm going to go to Pat, and then I'll go to Dave Gaethel.
I'm not going to comment on the part of it having to do with the industry, the issues the industry might have with it, but at least from the enforcement perspective, which is what the committee was talking about, I'm not aware that the Coast Guard or our enforcement or our attorneys, for that matter, have any issues with the enforceability of it. So we're comfortable that, as written, it is an enforceable requirement and that it's not difficult to make those kinds of measurements or enforce it.
Dave Gaethel.
Okay. I basically want to back up what Phil said, that the effectiveness of the device is not determined by the number of inches of chain. It's determined by the number of chains. That's number one. Number two, change that stretch in the second you put it in the water. It doesn't matter. That's just the nature of chain. It may be 14 inches when you put it in the water, and maybe 16 when it comes out. Is that a violation? And the third is the issue of safety for the Coast Guard boarding people. I can tell you, if I was a boarding officer, I don't want to stand underneath a scallop dredge with a tape measure while it swings back and forth trying to determine whether the chains are 14 inches apart, 15, or whatever, especially when the effectiveness of the device isn't related to the number of inches that the chains are spaced. So this was an issue of not safety for the industry, but safety for the boarding officers and the people who are actually trying to measure this, make this measurement.
Ron Smolowitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. I thought the motion was at the meeting was perfected to read differently, but I just wanted to bring the main point. When the industry developed these chains, one of the main design criteria that I was given when they suggested that we go look at this was that it could not be a measurement because the chains would continually change shape, and if you set your gear over legal, when it came back, it might have been out of compliance. So the enforcement issue here is the difficulty, almost the impossibility of the industry to comply with a measurement. All our field work then had no measurement involved. We tested 11 up and downs for 15-foot dredge by 6 ticklers. The instructions we gave to the fishermen was evenly space them. And the turtles, the minimum size turtle that we catch, is twice the size of the openings that this 11 by 6 configuration comes up with. We did not want to go with extra chains because the more chains you put on, the lower your scallop catch, the more bottom time, and you start increasing your encounter rate with turtles. And we did not test that, though from past experiences, I know that we tested 13 and we had a lower scallop catch. In the past with rock chains, the more chains, I've even published work on that, decreases your scallop catch. So there's a chance that if a fisherman tries to comply with a 14-inch spacing, he's going to add more chains and increase his bottom time and increase the risk to turtles. That has not been analyzed. What NIMS did, now the vote this morning was 2 and 2 abstentions because NIMS has put a gag order on its people and basically on the Coast Guard not to comment. So it's a little disingenuous to say that they haven't heard from the Coast Guard. The only thing we tested was the number of chains. That's the only scientific evidence out there. The 14-inch is an arbitrary and capricious number that popped up that will make it very near impossible for the industry to support this type of regulation and comply with it. And that, if we want industry to accept a rule, and remember, the industry pushed for this, it would be really bad to come back, modify the rule that would not save an additional turtle, will not provide any additional protections under the Endangered Species Act, but just make a rule onerous and possibly increase the risk to turtles. There are other issues that we have with the rule, and maybe I'd let Dave Fula, but I really think this council has to weigh in now and make a statement here, because what was done wrong. It was done without public comment, and for the record, there were a lot of falsehoods in when they did away with the chain reg and substituted the 14 inches, but we weren't allowed to comment. I really think there's a need for comment. Does every were the minutes of the meeting with my comments yes. passed out to everybody? Just to the committee members. They're not in the record. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, Roddy.
Yeah, I just want to expand on that a little bit. This is going to be another twine top issue, and sooner or later, somebody will get hurt if they're measuring them judges swinging. I don't want to see it happen, but it will happen. It's not a good practice to have on the industry or anybody measuring them. So. But that's why. But okay, I'll go on to the next one if you want. Or do you want
to? We have to have a vote, Rodney. Okay. Jim, can you keep it brief?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief on this, but it's Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seafood Consulting. Actually, I have a question more than a comment on this. At what point, maybe I'm making an assumption first. This was done by technical adjustment, is that correct? This 14-inch turtle, 14-inch rule on the turtle chains?
Right, it's not a Magnuson Act. It was done by emergency action under the Endangered Species Act.
But the regulation pertaining to 14 inches in measurement as opposed to numbers of change in configuration, I was told was done as a technical adjustment. then what was the basis for making this change in the regulations? Or what did they use for documentation or scientific evidence?
Okay. I'll just suggest that the motion on the board asks that the council send a letter to the service.
So well, I'm just trying to affirm in the council's mind why there is a need for this, because we've shown that we've, as an industry, we've tried to take a step ahead, and we're being pushed two steps backwards. So I'm just trying to show why or why not this regulation should be imposed. But I appreciate the time. Like I said, I just want to raise the issue.
If the motion passes, we do send the letter. I would imagine that that will come out in a response.
I understand that, but if they vote against it because they don't see any reason not to, I'm trying to show that there is a reason to support the letter. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Jim. All right, we'll come back to the council. We'll call a question unless there's other comments. Sally.
We're talking about two different things here. We're talking about safety and whether this configuration works or not. And I guess that's what the discussion was, kind of overlapping from enforcement and safety issues into whether this configuration does in fact work. If that's the question, then that if the
Coast Guard, JEA Partners, Office of Law Enforcement, evaluates a variety of factors, the egregiousness of the violation, the number of prior violations, the prior violation history, and then makes an evaluation where in that penalty schedule is appropriate. So that's basically how the penalty schedule works. So, yes, it can vary from individual to individual, but the facts of the case will vary if there is variation.
And to that point, I think that's what they were looking for, something like that. And I'll refer them to the website. We'll have it for the next meeting, and we'll discuss it. I think that's all they wanted.
Well, I'll want to table this motion then. Yeah. Paul.
Quick question. Does the council want to direct the committee to do this, look at penalty schedules with everything else we got to do? So, you know, again, we have a process. We direct the committee. We task the committee. And I don't think this is, you know, it's published. We've never asked to do that before. It's certainly, you know, we want justice and we want appropriate penalty schedules. I don't know that they're not. So I wouldn't direct the committee to look at this.
Mr. Salisbury.
I move the motion tabled indefinitely.
Is there a second? Seconded. All those in favor, raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 14 opposed. Abstentions. Motion's tabled. Laid on the table.
That's it.
You're all set,
Thank
Rodney?
You. Thank you. That's it.
Thank you. Okay, we'll meet back here tomorrow morning at 8:30 for our SBRM.